With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 668, Ghostbusters-ish.
Ghostbusters, The Force Awakens.
Afterlife. So, I didn't hate it.
This is going to be one of those shows, I think.
Yeah. So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Before we jump in, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. And maybe leave us a review if you would be so kind. If you haven't done that yet, it's the easiest thing you can do. Doesn't cost you a dime, and we greatly appreciate it. And then you could also join the League of Show Sharers, speaking of things that don't cost you a dime and we really appreciate. You can find us at facebook.com/realspoilers. The group is called the League of Show Sharers, and people who were kind enough to share an episode last week, Ralph Tribble, Heather Sachs, Librarian Cynthia, Julianne Jordan, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Sherman Power, Spoiler Piece Theater, Podcast HQ, The Manic Pixie Weirdo Podcast, In Session Film, Mike and Oscar, B. Garner, Chris Wilson, Binge Movies, Ronnie Castle, Chris Williams, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Invasion of the Remake, Feelin' Film, Matt Naglia, and Geek to Me Radio. So thank you very much, everyone, for sharing it. We greatly appreciate it. And speaking of things that do cost you several dimes, we have a Patreon.
And we still appreciate you.
Yes, we appreciate you more.
Yeah.
We sit around and talk about how wonderful you are. Patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and we love you long time. So, Ghostbusters.
Man, I love this movie.
Afterlife. I don't think I've ever seen a director love something this much,
yeah,
and completely misunderstand what he loves about it.
That's so strange you say that, because like that's my qualm with this movie.
Really?
Yes, I think,
and a director who grew up on the set.
I see. That's the problem. That's the problem. This is why they don't let surgeons operate on family members. Right? You're too close to it, and so he's. So you would think on paper, and I would have made the same mistakes, not above it. On paper, you think Jason Reitman's a really good director.
Absolutely.
And he's got Ghostbusters in his DNA.
Yeah.
And like, he's your guy. And he didn't make a movie that exalts Ghostbusters. He makes a movie that exalted his childhood time on the set of Ghostbusters.
We have said before that one of the things that comedy in 2020, I don't know, even comedy of the last...
Oh, was this a comedy?
Well, that's what I'm going to get at, right? Is in the last... Comedy in the last 10 to 15 years has gotten away from using actual comedians.
Yeah.
Right? The original Ghostbusters is full of guys that were comedians.
Yeah.
Right? Except with the exception of Ernie Hudson.
Right. Who was supposed to be Eddie Murphy.
Correct. Yeah. And the other one was supposed to be Belushi. Right. So it's like,
but
okay.
Those guys were improvisational.
Yeah. They were
Second City.
Second City.
They were all Second City.
Yeah. So like,
well, Eddie Murphy wouldn't have been, but. Yeah.
Right.
He was just a stand up.
So, and I think that there's a level of, I don't want to say disdain, but they, and maybe I'm overthinking it, which I did last week, apparently. They think that the original Ghostbusters, like it's dumbed down, right? And this is like the high art Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoyed this. I think this was fantastic. I thought it looked great.
I thought this was great.
I thought it was fun. I would love to watch it again.
I thought it was a great balancing act between old and new. Like, I felt like you've got all the stuff for the old crowd, but you could watch this movie never having seen it. And
this is The Force Awakens.
This is a better movie if you haven't seen the original Ghostbusters.
I think that could be true.
Which the kids they're trying to sell tickets to and maybe wouldn't have, because the original Ghostbusters isn't a kids movie.
I
don't have any, like, so kids these days, they know the song, they know the toys,
and
they might know the games.
I think a lot of parents have still let their kids watch Ghostbusters.
My kids have watched it.
And they just turn a blind eye during the blowjob scene. But
that's the thing, is they don't really have a, it's not a kids movie, and this is a movie that the whole family can watch.
Yeah.
Like, now kids have Ghostbusters.
Okay, but so was Goosebumps, and Goosebumps was funnier. Sure. Goosebumps should not be funnier than a Ghostbusters movie.
I agree. I think Paul Rudd was very funny in his role.
Paul Rudd is great.
Yeah.
And McKenna Grace is
she's the star of this movie.
Absolutely.
She is so good.
She's the lead character, really. It's her
absolutely
movie.
Yeah.
She's great. But
looks like Ramis and acts like Ramis. Yeah. She get that.
Oh, you know what was very disconcerting is, for me, this is just a personal note.
Yeah.
She looks so much like a 12-year-old version of my first girlfriend.
Oh, really?
Oh my God. The hair, the glasses, the...
Were you Ghostbusters fans? Did you go to Ghostbusters?
She loved Ghostbusters.
84?
She loved Ghostbusters.
That's funny.
In fact, she loved it so much. Her favorite reference in Ghostbusters is just a nothing throwaway, not even a line, it's a noise. And it's when Venkman first sees slime, and he's like, oh, someone blows your nose and you want to collect it. And he's like, collect the slime. He's like, da, da, da. Like, that was whenever she would come across
good.
Something
that's
gross, that is the noise she would make. So that was off-putting. I was like, God damn,
she did a great job.
She was great.
I think if you take everyone out of this cast, and I think you can, right? You can get rid of Finn Wolfhard, who looks like he's about 40 now. Like, I don't know what happened to that kid, but he grew up real quick.
From Stranger Things 2 to 3. I mean, that's how kids age.
Right.
It's
right. But if you would have just taken, streamlined this down, let it be the mom who I forgot was
Carrie Coon?
She's the sister in Gone Girl.
Yeah.
She plays Ben Affleck's sister.
I know Carrie Coon.
And she was in a season of Sinner, which was on a USA show, which is really good on Netflix right now. Let it be the mom, Paul Rudd, and the daughter. And this, like, is money. Like,
but the film, Finn Wolfhard stuff was innocent enough. I mean, he just he goes off and does his own thing for a couple things. But
I don't think it needed to. I don't think he's.
But if you take that out, are you going to miss anything?
I think they probably gave a boy character, a girl character. You know, it's just, I think they just have everything in here for everybody. You know, I think they just, you know what I mean? It's not necessary, but it also fulfills those roles, I guess.
Qualifications.
Why are there no jokes in this movie?
I agree. Like,
why are
there's some really good nerdy science jokes.
I think she.
No, I mean, it's not like there are jokes that don't work. Whenever it tries to be funny, it is. It just does it so rarely.
Yeah, I think. That's what I mean, right? Is like that original one is written by Ramis and Reitman, right?
Or is it just Ramis?
Aykroyd, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got guys who are joke writers.
And that's why the ghost stuff works, because to him, that's all true.
I correct. Know, when he's saying his stuff, it really puts it in new light now, because you know
yeah.
the stuff that he believes in
right,
and all that.
Right,
so
right,
when he's
right.
repeating this stuff, I'm like, oh God, that's Aykroyd. That is
right.
Really, he's not acting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Like when I saw Ghostbusters for the first time, I thought that was just a funny character, but
right.
I'm like, oh.
No,
like,
no, okay. no, no, that's probably the closest to the real man yeah. is we've ever seen on film.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do think that like that movie is as funny as it is. And the jokes work is because you have guys who are professional joke writers who weave in those jokes into the script. Right.
Well, and you know, they were punching them up on the spot.
For sure.
I mean, that's yeah. just, that's again, they're improvers. Like they
yeah,
all
the two of them. I mean, yeah, but, correct. And I think in this
all
one,
three. Ramis is
sorry.
Second
yeah,
city.
I'm yeah. always I'm thinking of that. Ramis doesn't count in the, I was thinking of
but
this
yeah.
one where he's not really a,
gotcha,
a thing.
Yeah.
But I do. I think that this one, the it jokes aren't jokes anymore, right? Like they're just long gags. You know, you watch the 40-year-old virgin, and they're not really telling jokes.
Oh, there's lots of jokes.
You think so? I just
yeah.
think it's like.
You know,
funny.
I mean, there's a whole scene.
I guess the whole waxing
like,
scene.
What's that?
The whole waxing.
Well,
scene.
The whole
that's a gag though.
That's a gag. But
yeah.
like the whole. You know how I know you're gay?
Yeah,
that's just one joke after another. Now maybe it didn't age
sure
as well as they
sure,
would have liked.
Sure.
But I mean, but that's just joke.
That's fair. That's
you know?
Fair.
I don't. You know, it's just it's interesting though because they do weave jokes throughout. I mean, I know the whole thing isn't just like a straight comedy through and through. But I found myself laughing and smiling and having a good time throughout the whole
there's
movie.
A difference between smiling and laughing. Especially at a comedy.
Well, yeah, I mean,
if you're on stage doing stand-up and the crowd is smiling,
right?
Like you're not doing well.
But I agree with
yeah.
you on that point because it's not a straight comedy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't classify this as a comedy.
And I just wish that, like, if they had done one more pass on this script,
yeah.
and put in jokes,
yeah.
and or beefed up Paul Rudd's role,
yeah,
because
yeah.
Paul Rudd. Is
he's your joke
I know
teller.
He doesn't come from Second City or Groundlings, but he's naturally funny
sure.
and
yeah.
can riff with the best of them. And like and when he's on screen, the movie comes to life from a comedic standpoint.
Sure.
And I like it.
I thought Podcast was very funny.
I think
he
not
worked
funny enough to carry the movie. He certainly had some funny moments, but
yeah.
but not funny enough. To, like, this isn't a Ghostbusters movie shouldn't have comedic relief. It should have ghost
yeah.
relief.
Yeah.
It's a comedic film with ghost relief.
Yeah. I can see what you mean. If you're a diehard fan of the originals, which I totally understand a lot of the audience will be, you know, this is the nostalgia factor. I can see you being maybe disappointed that it wasn't as funny as it could have been, certainly. But, you know, I think that there's a lot in there for everybody. Again, I think the special effects and the action sequences were well done.
But there's a lot of practical effects in this that I was not expecting.
Right. I mean, that's what I mean. Like practical special effects.
And
I mean,
that's where Jason Reitman helps. I feel
sure.
like that's a lesson learned from Ghostbusters 2.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly, so between Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2, like you got the rise of CGI.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
And so in Ghostbusters 1, most of the effects, like the whole like levitating scene,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's just a magic trick.
Sure.
Like they just found a magician and said, "How do you levitate a girl?" And then that's what they
mm-hmm.
did.
Right.
They didn't do that for Ghostbusters 2. They started using more CGI,
all CG,
right?
Yeah.
And so the it's like, again, he learned the lesson but missed the point. So, like, the point wasn't that the practical effects looked better,
yeah.
although they did.
Yeah.
The lesson there was that when you did CG, you no longer had Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver in the same room.
Right.
So he wasn't able to riff and punch it up on the fly like he did in the first
right,
movie.
You need them in the room
you
together.
You need them together.
Right.
And so CGI robbed them of that ability to put them together. And so, like, and so in this case, you get rid of CG. I mean, you don't
for the most
it,
part.
But,
I mean,
there's obviously a lot
yeah.
of CG. But you bring back practical and you lean on it as much as you can.
Which is great. It looked great.
Which looks better.
Yeah.
But then you didn't put any comedians there to help you make it funnier.
It's crazy to think of, like, when they announced that they were going to reboot, not reboot, but I guess like do a sequel, right?
Right.
At one point it was I kind of refer to them as the frat pack guys, whereas the guys from The Hangover were going to come in and do.
It was going to be like, originally it was going to be Paul Rudd, Michael Cera, Seth Rogen,
Bradley Cooper.
Like that would have, I think that could have been a really good movie. And then I think they were like, oh, it's a little bit too bro-y. And then they pivoted and went
2016,
with, which is I enjoyed.
I have no problem
it
with 2016.
Was also not great and missed it was not as awful as people played it up
but
to
also
be. But it also missed the
comedians.
Mark a little bit. But they brought in comedians.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing, and is the people were funny in that movie,
right.
but the writing was not good. So they didn't get to, and I guess their improv couldn't save it.
Yeah.
I think the script was really not there. I thought that Chris Hemsworth is the funniest part of that 2016 movie.
Yeah, I agree with
you. I mean, he's not the lead. He shouldn't be the funniest one in a movie with four comedians.
Although Kate McKinnon is really funny.
Yes.
She is. And she does a good Egon impression.
I rewatched the first half of it last night.
Okay.
And she was funny. Yeah. Like she was, you know.
But Chris Hemsworth steals that movie.
It's funny when they're just like, just get the eye candy from Thor. And they're like, wait a minute. That dude's funny?
He's hilarious.
Who knew?
Yeah, he's got a great comedic sense. Yeah.
But I agree. I think that, again, I agree that I adored this movie. I think it was, I do think of it, it is very much The Force Awakens.
It's a soft reboot for a new generation.
It hits
of,
the same buttons that The Force Awakens did.
You shouldn't adore a Ghostbusters movie. Like, that's my thing. Like, so, like, the adoration is playing on
nostalgia.
The love of the film, not what the film actually is. Like, there's nothing in that first Ghostbusters movie that's soft and gooey.
No, that's true.
Right?
Slimer,
but like, there's nothing like that movie was all about irreverence. This is the kind of the first time you saw like a kid version of that SNL. Like everything at the time was slobs versus snobs, right?
Yeah.
It was Animal House. It was Caddyshack. It was Stripes. It was like the anti-establishment. It, you know,
it's weird. Bill Murray.
Right. It was like the smart asses who don't have power are the ones who really know what's going on, which is also why that plays so well for kids, right?
Oh, sure. Because
that's how kids feel, right? Mm-hmm. That movie came out when I was 13. It was made in a lab for me.
I was two, but yes.
So shut up. So, I mean, I remember just how massive that movie was. I mean, I probably saw it four or five times in the theater.
Is that right?
Summer. Oh, my God. It was like the movie to see. I mean, it made like $225 million
I was gonna ask.
In 1984.
That's so much money.
Yeah.
That's so much money.
Like, this movie is in present dollars isn't going to make $225 million.
Probably not. No.
Maybe worldwide, but not domestic.
Yeah,
not domestic.
Not domestic.
No. No way domestic. Maybe worldwide.
I think, I guess when I say I adored this movie is like it did hit all the nostalgia points.
Right.
Like it
this
hit
is
everything.
An incredibly emotional movie.
I did not expect my emotional reaction at the end.
I cannot believe I teared up during a Ghostbusters movie twice. Like that ending.
I did
is
not.
Just
I did
so
not expect that.
To me, that's like saying like, oh man, this the animal or. American Pie 6 really, really got me.
But you know
in
what?
The feels.
But I don't know. I think that films can grow and evolve, and they grow with us as the audience grew up with them. And I think that they can change and become different things. And this one still, I think, had the spirit. I know not the comedic spirit, but I think it touched on a lot of things that we loved. Like it obviously was a love letter to the original movies, and it made me feel. And that's what movies
set out to do. I just feel like that's. But like I said, it's more playing on your love. Like
it is
the love you came to have for a film.
It's
not what the what that source material was actually trying to do.
I think that's a fair assessment, and I think you're spot on.
Yeah, and so like,
I don't know if that's wrong. You know, I'm like, if people enjoy and they feel something and they really like,
how long ago did he die?
After year one, right? Like 2010.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Short. That was his last movie, and I know.
And then how long ago did Reitman die? A year?
Reitman?
Last year?
Reitman died?
Dead. He's not dead?
He's not dead.
Oh, I thought he died.
His dad's a producer on this movie.
Oh, good. Never mind then.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. I'm like, no.
Hopefully when this comes out, everything's still fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, jeez.
Or you're going to be suspect number one. But yeah, I just, like I said, it's not a bad movie. Yeah. I didn't hate it. And I will also say the stuff at the end, I when we get there, I felt like it went on too long. I felt like they I won't say they go to the well too much because they really only go to it once, but they stay in that well a long time.
Man,
I thought I saw Baby Jessica. We were in that well for a long time.
But man, I don't know. It worked on me 100%. Where it got, I was like, it was so nice. Like, what a touching tribute.
I will
tribute.
Say the first one got me. Second one, not so much, but the first one, absolutely.
The first one, I was just like, okay, this is, but then it just, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah, right.
I like it.
I don't know.
With them,
I think you kind of have to have that, right? Like that plot point is like a point throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
So you kind of need that. Like, that's the payoff for
I just felt like,
entire
story. I don't know.
Story.
I've needed to be tightened up or slightly different. I don't know. But,
let's talk about the story.
Yeah. So we've got, our nuclear family for the most part. So it's the Spenglers. It is, well, I guess we should say the minus one. The opening of this movie is you see someone who is definitely Egon in 2021 kind of being chased back to this dirt farm, but we don't know what it is.
Oh, and can we talk real quick though, like, this is why I don't watch trailers. This is why I don't want to know anything about a movie.
Yeah,
I did not know Egon was going to be in this movie.
I don't think we knew that.
I didn't.
I don't think
I watched,
that was in the trailer.
I watched the first initial teaser trailer, but I have come around to your side. Is I will not. I'll watch that teaser trailer because they can't really give anything
away. But yeah, you know, and as the trailers go on, like second, third trailers, and people talk about.
I haven't watched the Far From Home trailer. I'll tell you that.
Okay, but almost all movies do spoil stuff like that in the trailers.
No,
even
totally.
If this
So if it was in the trailer, I either didn't see that trailer or it just I.
But I don't
want to
hear people talk about it because this movie starts up and I'm like, what?
Yeah, right.
And like that feeling, what greater feeling? Like when you go to a movie and you're surprised. Imagine going to Spider-Man. I haven't seen the movie, but I feel like I have because I know every cameo that's in it, villain.
Or do you?
But imagine going to the theater and you hear freaking Willem Dafoe laugh.
Yeah, right,
and a pumpkin
right.
bomb comes out and you'd be like, oh, crap. Like,
I haven't paid attention to any of the Spider-Man stuff.
I saw that initial trailer.
We won't get it. Oh, trust me. There's a million other things to be spoiled by. But why have we gotten away? I get they want to sell tickets and it's all about marketing and there's a lot of content, whatever. But like, that's what I love going to the movie and being surprised and shocked.
I agree.
And so anyway, it just makes me so mad. It's like, why do I know all these villains are in this movie? I don't want to know. You tell me Spider-Man and I go, okay, I'll be there.
I'm in.
Night. Like, you don't have
you
to
had
sell me
at Spider-Man.
Anyway, I think Marvel's big enough now where they should just go, coming out next Thursday, a new Marvel movie, show up and find out who's in it.
Yeah.
And they'll still sell 500 million you know, so anyway, but
it would have worked for Eternals.
It would have.
not knowing Egon.
It was a nice
pull,
and it's like he's obviously in shadow. It's a different actor in the beginning, but he's got like
you
the
can
right
still tell
because he's got the right hair. Yeah. He's got everything. He's got the right glasses, and he sets up this what we don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
It turns out he has got this giant ghost trap, and it doesn't work. And this is he goes back and kind of collapses in a chair and drops a ghost trap like into this little like Tetris style thing in the floor. And this is like the first homage we see is this is actually, I don't know if you remember, but this is when this is the exact same scene of when Dana is taken for the first time.
Yeah.
Because you had arms come out of the chair and grab her and pull her back.
It looked like the same chair.
It did look like the same, which I think it may, right? Like that has to be on purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So
well, plus you need a chair with thick arms so the arms
can come up
through it. So, yeah.
So then we flash forward to our three, Finn Wolfhard and
Carrie Coon
and the girl.
And McKenna Grace.
McKenna Grace. And McKenna Grace steals this movie.
Yeah, it's her movie.
And it's her movie, but she steals every scene she's in. She's got the same kind of curly like frock that Egon has. And the big glasses. And she's very smart.
So where they
smart.
Even hold Egon's glasses up at one
which
point.
Which I thought was great.
Oh, these are the same glasses. Like literally. They don't just look like that.
Right. And we're 30 years past the original Ghostbusters, but that incident in New York, which it's funny that they don't talk about the other incident in New York, like they only reference the Stay Puft Marshmallow. I'm like, what about Vigo? All right,
yeah, it's almost like they retconned Ghostbusters 2 out of existence as well.
Exactly,
they do that with a lot of movies.
Well,
because
they also don't reference that
the baby,
the baby,
yeah,
right.
Oscar?
So who knows
that little bastard?
So this is a sequel.
This is a sequel to one.
We see Egon in the beginning. We hear about the incidents. We see clips of their commercials from the first movie,
which I think is great.
It's fantastic. Just that footage.
Was that footage of Ramis and Annie Potts? Was that like a deleted scene?
Yeah, must have been.
That's pretty.
That's real footage.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah. So they life isn't the best for the not Spanglers. We don't know that they're Spanglers yet, but it's pretty obvious.
I really like how Carrie Coon. Her character, the mom, is portrayed because in movies, especially like family-esque movies, usually get like the mom that has it all together and she's just so like accommodating and sweet and nice to the kids and everything. And this mom is just like, hey, what's up? Oh, whatever. Like, I thought she was very funny and also very refreshing.
Not together.
Yeah. But she was just living life. Like, I mean, in the real world, not the movie world, you know, you've got jobs, you've got problems, and you're dealing with your kids, and you're dealing with paying the bills and everything. She is having a hard time paying the rent.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of refreshing to have the mom in one of these movies be a real human being with real problems. And I liked that portrayal.
I agree. I think... Dana in the first one is exactly what you're describing. She's together. She's got everything under control.
Yeah.
And then all hell breaks loose for her.
So I like that. And I like how she was just very much like whenever her daughter would say something, she would just be kind of like, huh? Okay. Well, like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I like when she's like messing with the power and she was like, can you not do that?
Yeah. She's kind of flipping. Like, I don't know. Her very carefree, not, you know what I mean? Like she's dealing with all this stuff, but it's not getting to her. She's just kind of going.
Or it is getting to her and she's just having to put on a face and keep pushing through.
Yeah. I mean, you can see where she's like falls asleep at the table with a glass of wine. Like clearly the pressures, she has them and feels them, but I don't know. I really liked her in this movie.
Yeah, no, I did. Great. I did as well. She gets there. They find out they're getting evicted. So they have to go to this dirt farm in this nothing town to settle up whatever.
The dirt farmer?
The dirt, which is like, I think that's I do like that running gag where everybody's like, the dirt farmer had a family?
No offense, but he never planted anything. Right, everyone in the town, but she's going there anyway to clean up his affairs.
Correct.
After he passes away, but then they get evicted. So she's like,
I guess we're
staying. To the kids, like, it's going to be more than a week.
Right. This is the second cameo, I guess, if you want to include the Egon one, where Annie Potts walks through the door and she's the same character and she was kind of in charge of Egon's affairs. Mm-hmm. And Egon being Egon, like, just kind of let things fall by the way. He would focus on this project and then he would
all
just,
of his money clearly went into all those basement full of gadgets,
which I think is great. Like it's got the pole, it's got the, you know,
he's not keeping up on it any of the house or whatever.
No,
it's like it's all down there with these things strewn, all this technology strewn all about. And
right. So now, like, we're in this town and it's, you know, it's very throwbacky to like a 1960s town where it's got sort of like a burger joint with people on roller skates and Finn Wolfhard sees a girl that he likes and starts to.
Did they name that restaurant Burgers Spinners just to take the P out and get that one gag? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what the hell kind of name for a restaurant is that? And when they did it, I'm like, oh. So you
guess on the roller skates, they're spinning.
Spinners?
I've never heard of
it. It is a stretch.
I've never heard of
a
roller skater called, hey, look at those spinners. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? I just, okay. They were like, oh, if we take that P out. The one where I was going, that's not.
I do think it's funny that Finn Wolfhard is trying to, meet
those
people.
Wheels are called spinner wheels.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
That's okay. Not rollerblades, but the when you're at
the quads.
Those are called spinner wheels.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I just never heard, like, I don't know, to name a restaurant, but okay.
It was a reach. I'm not defending the
joke. It was clearly to get that
one. As much as
one.
I wanted more jokes in the film, I will not defend that
I will not defend that joke.
But it was to get that gag.
It was.
There's no way. They were like, let's think of a really good name for this. Oh, Burger Spinners. Yeah.
I got a joke for you.
I admire his confidence. Like, that kid, to his credit, new town, doesn't know anybody,
goes right
people,
after
other workers, guys around, goes right up to the girl and starts chatting her up.
Right.
He's not good at it, but good for him.
My favorite scene between them is when he's in the freezer and she's like, here, take my sweatshirt. And he's like, it's big. And he puts it on and she was like, where'd you get this? She's like, it's my boyfriend. She's like, wow.
Yeah.
Like he just starts to take it off. So the McKenna Grace is in school, which I just think is ridiculous because she's obviously leaps and bounds ahead of these kids, but she's going to summer school anyway.
Because she loves school, right? Correct. I took it as like she wanted to go to school. Like she's like, what am I going to do in my summer? She wants to go to school.
Yeah.
She chose it where all the other kids are clearly not happy about being there because there's no school going on. It's
summer school.
It's movies.
Yeah. Oh, which I think is even better. Like that's, I had a teacher like that. It was great.
Like he wheels out the VHS cards. Like clearly your school still
but he knows the school. Like when he says your school, it's like, don't you teach there?
No, he's a summer school teacher. I think he took the job.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think to me, it was like he's a seismologist or whatever, and he just wanted to get some money. And
yeah. Oh, I took it as he was the science teacher, and this is what he does in the summer, but seismology is kind of his
hobby. Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I just meant I don't know that he necessarily does teach there. But
it's crazy. I love Paul Rudd. And sometimes he can get overshadowed by people that he's on screen with. Mm. And I think in this one, man, every time he is on screen, it is absolutely delightful.
Because you know you're going to hear a joke.
That's not even that, but he like, but yes.
He has the charisma, though.
Right? When that first meet cute with him and the
I know
mom,
he was just voted sexiest man alive and blah, blah, blah.
but for real,
I don't know why. And it's not like he's not having a good career, but why isn't he a bigger star than
I agree. He should be. I mean,
he got a Marvel movie, which is pretty big.
But he got Ant-Man, which is the opposite of big.
Or is it?
You know, he's got a third Giant one coming Man. Out. He's in the Avengers movies. Like, yeah, I get it.
But it's definitely like
he could be.
It's not Iron Man.
Yeah.
Right. In the Marvel universe, I mean, they're successful movies, but they're
lower tier.
Ant-Man is tier two.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully with this next one, you know, I think they're building enough goodwill and with the old guard kind of leaving and him, you know, he's going to be one of the old guys now.
Totally. Yeah. Left. No, so, that could absolutely.
So I'm thinking that the next one's kind of like, okay, now he's the A-list of the.
He's going to be. They're not going to have much of a choice. But like this meet cute, I think is great. Like them like playing off each other. And then when it's him and McKenna Grace. Well, I love when so he puts on the Cujo on VHS and the kids are like, you can tell it's a great panning shot of like the kids who were just totally unsure of what they're watching.
Yeah.
And he's in the back looking at stuff and McKenna Grace kind of walks around the corner and he's just like, hey, what are you doing in here? And like their interaction, I think, is fantastic.
He's like, hey, you know, there's a movie about a
murderous rabid dog. She's like, but when she makes the joke and the wink, and he goes, was that a joke? And she goes, that's why I winked.
I love
I
that.
Like, oh man,
I loved that joke and that wink that she does. She is so good, and I thought that was hilarious.
Where do I know her from? Anything?
Oh, she's been in a. I mean, I don't know that you know her from
XYZ.
From like a big movie, but she's been in a lot of stuff.
Okay.
She was in a remake of The Bad Seed for Lifetime.
Didn't see that.
With Rob Lowe, which if you've ever seen I don't know if the remake's any good, but if you've ever seen the original Bad Seed. Oh, yeah. Such a good movie.
Yeah.
She began her acting career at the age of 6 with her earliest roles, including Jasmine Bernstein in the Disney XD sitcom Crash and Bernstein.
Nope.
And in the soap opera The Young and the Restless.
Oh, good for her.
I didn't know she was on that. But I thought she was on one of those talent things. I may be thinking of someone else. She was in a movie Gifted with Chris Evans, directed by Mark Webb.
Oh, I saw that.
You saw that one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That's what I... Okay.
But she's been in a lot of stuff. She was in Annabelle Comes Home. That's probably another one.
We covered it, I think.
Yeah.
And
she's the daughter. That's what it is. She's the daughter in that movie.
And she appeared in Marvel Studios' film Captain Marvel as the younger version of the titular character.
Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, is she?
Handmaid's Tale. So she's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely remember her.
I would point out very different things.
Very different things.
Like, right? She goes from like kind of schlock horror to highbrow
TV.
Prestige television to Disney
Joe.
Wackiness.
I know. She was Ella Bird in the Angry Birds movie.
There it is.
There Bingo.
That was the one. That
Thanks,
you were.
Scott Mosier.
She was young Tanya Harding in I, Tanya.
Yeah.
She was in Ready Player One as one of the kids in one of the schools.
Okay. I mean, she's been working forever.
But, I mean, she's been in a lot. Wait a minute.
She will also be playing my first girlfriend in the feature film of my life.
Young Madison Lake in Malignant. She played
really?
The young Maddie in Malignant.
Okay, okay.
Just kind of ran, yeah.
So they kind of start chit-chatting about none of this makes sense. None of these earthquakes make sense.
Hold on. She played a character named Arden in that movie, How to Be a Latin Lover. Wasn't that the movie that made like $1 trillion?
Yeah, and we were just like, what is this movie? Where is all this money?
It was like
from?
At the top of the box office for a long time, and it just
kept chugging
random,
along.
But we had never, and did, you know, it made several dozens, millions. We were just like, what is this movie? Anyway, I just thought that was funny.
That's pretty
like,
good.
Oh, okay.
So McKenna Grace goes, what's her character's name in this?
Egon Jr. I believe.
She goes home and she starts to, does she find the Tetris box first and then goes to the basement? Because she's got the, she starts playing chess. That's what it is. There's a chess board that's all knocked over and she sets it back up. And when she wakes up in the morning, the pawn has moved. She moves the bishop and like there's a chess game going on. And then she finds the old, ghost tracker, which I had one of those. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
The amount of Ghostbusters, it's crazy to think the amount of Ghostbusters crap that I had as a kid, yeah. Right? We had the figures and Ecto-1. Both of them. I watched them both. Renting one of them, thinking it was the right one, realizing, where is this?
You watched the one with the monkey?
Why is this weird car and the ghost?
You watched the one with Forrest Tucker?
Yeah. Not Larry Storch. Not a good cartoon.
Yeah. The cartoon. Okay, so like the cartoon.
Oh, yes, there was a cartoon that was just called Ghostbusters.
No, I know, because there was a TV show called Ghostbusters.
Oh. Right.
And it starred Forrest Tucker and Larry Storch, who were like the two like goofy con men from F Troop.
Okay.
And it was a Saturday morning live action TV show. It ran for like 15 episodes and they canceled it.
Do you want to phone a friend? We can get Dan on the phone.
Yeah. And when they made the movie Ghostbusters, they wanted to call it Ghostbusters. And they were like, this TV show had like 15 episodes 15, 20 years ago. Nobody remembers it.
Right.
And so they cut a deal with the show so they could use the name.
Okay.
Right? And the deal was that they're like, well, you're making this live action. You're making this movie for like maybe not grown-ups, but not for like kids. And they're like, basically, like, as long as you don't make like a kid version of this, we're good. And then they made and then the movie got really big and they made a cartoon.
Yeah.
And then they were like, And so that's why the cartoon was always called The Real Ghostbusters.
There was another cartoon called Ghostbusters.
Right. And that cartoon is based on this TV show.
That cartoon came from a live action TV.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I didn't realize that.
Is based on this TV show.
See, we never knew that.
And so when Ghostbusters, the movie, the real one, right, becomes this huge hit, now the people that created this TV show are like, well, we own the rights to something called Ghostbusters, and you can't stop us.
Wow.
And so they made a cartoon version of it.
Okay.
And then the Venkman version of Ghostbusters wanted to make a cartoon, they couldn't call it Ghostbusters, so they called
it the real
Ghostbusters.
I like how they called themselves
When, oddly enough, other Ghostbusters is technically the real one.
Those other guys are like, hey,
a better
wait a
name
minute.
Would have been the Ghostbusters you actually give a shit.
The good Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's playing chess, and then she picks up the ghost tracker and ends up tracking it to basically Egon's safe house. And she finds all of this stuff
finds the trap in the floor.
She finds the trap in the floor. She takes it to school. And this is where Paul Rudd's like, oh, cool, a replica.
One of those.
And she
I
was
like that, how like the kids don't know or don't care about all this. And there haven't been ghosts in a long time, so I can see how they don't even really think they're real.
Also, like how many podcasts do you hear these days? Or you don't, but I do because I'm 51. And where it's like, they're like, this forgotten thing that nobody remembers. And I'm like, I totally remember this. I didn't realize other people didn't remember You know, when all of a sudden there's a podcast about like the fraudulent Hitler diaries. And I'm just like, hey, wait a minute. No, I remember that. Yeah. Like, that's, oh, did Pete, I didn't realize as a culture we forgot that.
That's
yeah.
funny.
So, you know, it's like, so these kids don't know anything or think anything of this, but Paul Rudd, he grew up with it.
Yeah.
So he's like, I lived through that time
right.
in New York. And
it was
all
like
this.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he notices, like, is that, that's a great replica. It looks so real and all that. And then he sees like a little ghost emit from it.
Yeah,
he's
there's like a little thing that like ghost smoke that pops up. Yeah. He's like, where did you get that?
Yeah.
And I do like this scene where Phoebe sees Egon on this little like clip of them walking out of that high rise building. And she like, I took it as like Phoebe never knew who her grandpa was.
Yeah,
like never, right?
Yeah, the mom wouldn't talk about him.
Yeah. But as soon as she sees him, she's
she
like, hey, that guy looks just like me.
That's the guy I've modeled my entire life after that I've never seen.
Right.
I even got the same glasses.
It was so weird.
Genetic glasses.
Genetic glasses, yeah. So they take the trap outside and they can't get it to open. I think this scene's really
hilarious.
Funny where they've got it tied up to
podcast. We
got
to mention again,
this kid podcast.
This kid in summer school walks in and again, I think he is hilarious. He's doing a podcast as he walks into the summer school and he's like talking about describing the way it looks and the kids and everything. And he's so funny in the way he points the microphone to her to talk
and
everything.
She's like, oatmeal.
Yeah. And he commentates on it and everything. So this kid is really funny throughout and he's there. He's like in the school
bus.
He's
in the entire time, right? Like there are moments where he's scared, mm-hmm. but he's with it. Like this is quality material for podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think.
So they fire it up. So Paul Rudd's got the jumper cables from the bus. Podcast is the one that's getting ready to fire it up.
Right.
And he says, hit it. He turns it on. And at first, the trap doesn't do anything. And Paul Rudd kind of goes up and touches it. And then, boom.
Yeah. And here comes Not Slimer, which I think
Slimer. It's the
Muncher.
It's not Muncher. It's
a different one?
It's a demon thing. It's a hellhound or whatever.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a
the
big
first
beast
time.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's either Zool or the Gatekeeper. That's
yeah.
who it is. Yeah. 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 So it takes off, and then of course the glass is shattered. The scene that I also really like is them is Paul Rudd driving the kids home with no windshield,
yeah, and picking the glass out of the windshield,
and podcast like leaning on the dash, like with the hair, you know, yeah. hair blown back,
and he drops them off at home, and she's like, "You brought them home. It's a service I provide. I mean, that stuff is great.
Yeah, and then them together, I think works really
yeah,
well.
Right.
I like them.
I think my favorite line from him is later when he's dropping her off from the date, and he says something like, would you like some room temperature shrimp?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She's like, no, you can keep it. He's like, oh, thank you. Now, this is where the chess game has moved forward, and she picks up the ghost tracker and tracks it to Egon's secret lair. She slides down the pole. You know, all the lights turn on and we get just a hodgepodge of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is she goes to a storage locker, and there are the jumpsuits. There are Egon's jumpsuits. You see the name on the jumpsuit with a crunch bar in the pocket,
movie.
Which I think is great. Like, yeah. That's a great callback. His glasses are in the pocket, and this is where you get the glasses up against hers. And she kind of runs upstairs and kind of dresses down her mom. She's like, why didn't you tell me my, you know?
So you think Nestle Crunch had to pay for that product placement again?
Yeah, I would think
or
so.
Do
I
you
bet
think...
they take it to them, like Twinkie, Nestle Crunch.
The
I,
Twinkie,
I bet they go, this is a Ghostbusters
I think
movie.
The Twinkie reference to me was like, God dang, like that is... Not even just the reference, just to have the Twinkie is fantastic. Like it's one of my favorite lines in that movie, in the first one. So the fact that they have like a Twinkie yeah. sitting there, I was like, that's great.
But I think what's great is that they took blatant product placement, and even the guys in the first movie punched it up. I mean,
yeah.
when Bill Murray does that thing with a crunch bar, he took a blatant product placement, but kind of made it funny and played with it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was a really great way. But now we're nostalgic about blatant product placement,
right.
but it works here because you're like, oh, that's the thing from, you don't even really feel like it's blatant. You're
right.
just like, oh yeah, that moment from the first one.
Right. So this is where Phoebe kind of dresses down her mom and just like, why didn't you tell me? And this is where you get that feeling from.
You know, Paul Rudd dresses her down later.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Where it like, you can feel the hurt and the pain from Carrie Coon about her dad just up and left. And obviously the theory for the longest time is like, oh, Annie Potts is her mom. So like when Annie Potts walks in, you're just like, oh, it's not
but
her mom.
But does she know her mom? See, that's the question is we don't really, was she given up for adoption or something? Like we don't.
I didn't take that at all.
I don't know.
I'm going to say no because he has all those pictures And I don't.
Somebody's sending him those pictures, but I guess the adopted mom could have.
I guess
sent
that's
the pictures.
True. That's
but
possible.
I also think that, like, one, if Annie Potts was the mom, I think she'd have a bigger reaction if
when she walks
showing
the door.
Her the home.
Yeah,
I just
when Annie Potts walks through that door, you would think that like there'd be a degree of like, "Hey, mom."
No, that's true. Yeah, I just it's weird because they play up the Annie Potts and Harold Ramis stuff,
yeah.
But then they. You know what I mean? I just, it was a perfect opening for them to do something, but I get that maybe they didn't want to like convolute.
Yeah. And they hinted that later, right? Like when we see that unused footage of them.
That's
together,
what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's like they're doing that, but then also they didn't take the opportunity to have that be a connective. So I don't know.
Could be.
But I think they could retcon it somehow. I'm not saying it's
they
for
could,
sure.
But I think it would be bad.
Yeah. Know? I think
because the whole point is that he gave up his daughter so he could try to save the world from ghosts,
yeah.
Right? What and Annie Potts gave up her daughter so she could be the project manager
for him saving
the world from
so
ghosts.
So I guess you could I get it. And I guess that you could say that Annie Potts, she's just like, she couldn't deal with it anymore. Like obviously she loved him, but if he just wouldn't do anything but concentrate on this thing and couldn't give her any attention.
He's Reed Richards.
Yeah, but I could see how like, even though they didn't break up because of something malicious, but I could see how they could go their separate ways. She's like, this is all you care about. There's no ghosts anymore. We haven't seen them for years. And all you can do is think about this biblical prophecy that is.
Well, I think if they were going to make her be her mom, that needed to be addressed immediately as soon as she sees her. And you could even say like they just became estranged later on. Right. But
I'm not even talking about that she's the mom.
I'm saying
that I can see why they'd split up because what I'm saying is they show this nice thing at the
end. I'm with you.
Well, if they're a thing and they love each other and they're, you know, why would they ever break up? But I could see them say like, oh, well, he was just in love with his work and it didn't work out.
So we're running a little short on time, so I'll kind of speed through this. Basically what happens is the guy who built the tower in New York that was like this conduit for Gozer and everything.
The guy they mention
with
the blueprints.
Right. This guy also built this town. Like, he is responsible for this town, and he basically has like a backup plan. If Gozer,
Ivo Shandor. So he's a throwaway comment.
It's a great name, by the way. Like, it's a very fun name. So what he did is he built two temples, basically, right? So the temple at the top of the building in Manhattan, and then he's got another one here. And when our characters find that building,
so Finn Wolfhard and the girl he's hitting on,
they
and all
see
the...
it like come up for a second, and then because like the barrier is starting to break, like the Egon, we find out, had set it up where he's got like four proton packs linked together, and every time there would be this earthquake, which is these ghosts and spirits coming back up, they would set off an alarm and the proton packs would fire. They'd cross the streams, which is just like, I thought you said that's a bad thing. And would push the ghosts and demons and Gozer back down. And that's, he had this setup. And what he was trying, what we find out, what he was trying to do is, yes, it's a dirt farm, but it's also a giant ghost trap. Like this whole thing is,
I feel like they
massive-
revealed that too soon. I felt like it would have been so much more effective if they had hid that from the audience until the ghosts chase him back and then have McKenna Grace
be like,
no, this whole farm is a trap. Bam. And then start snagging ghosts. Like
that's a good call.
That's how that should have been revealed to us.
So
I think
I'm trying. Well, it doesn't really matter because we see him, the ghost, we see him try it in the first one and it blows the generators or whatever. And it doesn't work. The one scene we kind of glossed over is Finn Wolfhard fixes sort of his ghost grandpa fixes Ecto-1, and I gotta tell you, as soon as I heard the siren, like right in the chest, and I don't know why.
Well,
but
you know,
like
there's musical cues from the first one.
There's a lot.
Entire movie.
There's a lot.
They use the same musical cues, which I think is kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
And I do like how they reveal the car and the lights go out, and he's like, "Ugh!" You get the car reveal, and then he takes it away.
Which is pretty cool. But yeah, we find out. Did they have gunner seats?
There's a toy.
No, that's a new thing.
It was a toy. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But yeah, I was trying to think if it was in two.
No.
But I don't remember it.
Because the Turtlemobile had gunner seats, and I think...
Oh. By the time they started having toys, I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
I was...
But that was... So,
at the right age. From,
yeah.
I feel
but the
bad
kids
for
that
my
grew
folks.
Up with the toys, it's like, that's the thing
that's
from
the
gunner, toy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So McKenna Grace Phoebe fixes a proton pack and she's playing with it out in like the, you know, the field bottles or whatever. And she was like, did I get it? And the podcast like, did you get it?
It doesn't exist anymore.
And this is where we get the reveal.
And then they go get Muncher. They find Muncher,
which I just think is funny. Maybe it's because they hit too many nostalgia notes.
Yeah.
Is they couldn't use Slimer. Right. Like, I feel like,
I think it's good that they didn't go back to that well. That's what I'm saying. Muncher, who's basically the same.
They're trying to leave something for
two
Ghostbusters after Afterlife.
Yeah. Well, that's good because
Rise of Egon.
This movie is also kind of Ghostbusters Easter eggs.
Big time.
Know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that's good. They gave you a new one. They need new toys, all that stuff. Not that Slimer toys wouldn't sell, but it's like
Muncher. When they showed this trailer, I swear to God, I could have sworn this thing was green. In that first teaser trailer, I could have sworn he was like green. Like, I was like, well, all right, Slimer's back.
It's like light blue.
Yeah, he's like.
But he eats metal, so that's his thing, which I thought was clever the way that they get their stuff back.
You get Slimer, but you don't get Slimer.
The bringing back of Muncher and went to get the stuff out of the evidence
locker.
Because
I was like, how are they
going
to do this? I thought that was a great callback to
podcast. Like, got it.
Yeah, that was good.
So they find him and they chase him around, and then I guess this is
a great scene. I think this scene is like one of the best scenes of the movie
when they're shooting
Finn in Ecto-1 chasing around the town. I think that's great.
And all that destruction, and I'm glad that there was consequences, right? Because they shoot up the town, and you're like, well, they're just gonna get away with it, and it's never gonna, you know, in a lot of movies they would do that,
right?
But in this movie, they get him
and they get arrested.
And they get arrested.
And the one phone call that Phoebe makes is to the old Ghostbusters line, because she saw it on the ad.
Yeah.
And who answers
Chekhov's
the phone?
Phone number.
That's right. But Dan Aykroyd answers the phone. Yeah. And he's a different Ray. He's a different Ray Stans now than from before. He's not as full of like life, I guess. I remember Ray being just like, this is the greatest thing ever.
He's just about all that stuff.
And now he's not.
Well, think about it. 20-something years, there's been no ghosts. A lot of people probably don't believe in them, think he's crazy. And it's like, that's hard when that's his whole thing. And people are just like,
and
no,
his friends are gone.
I run some old ghost shop now. You know, it's just like. But I like that, you know, they bring up Egon. He's like, Egon can go to hell.
Yeah, I was like,
he just passed
away.
And he's like, oh, and he immediately changes tone.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, I'm listening. I don't know what I can do but talk. And she's explaining things. And he's telling her about the history and everything. And it's just a nice moment.
Yeah, the last thing she gets out is, I'm Egon's granddaughter. And then
the cop
hangs up the phone.
The cop who's the dad, the sheriff who's the dad of the girl that Finn Wolfhard's hitting on.
The love interest.
Small town.
Yeah, you ain't lying.
I like this moment between them when she's like, here, I need you to hold something for me. You're a minor. You only get 2 years.
He was like, okay.
And then the dad comes by and lets her out. She's like,
just waiting on my ride.
Just waiting. Yeah, that was good.
So now everybody's kind of, now the mom is super pissed, which is just kind of interesting. Like, I have been in a similar situation, not chasing ghosts, but like, where my
thank you for clarifying
where I have been told to do something by a parent, or like a parent's like, I really just want him to do this one thing, and then I do that one thing, and then I get in trouble for doing that thing, right? Because the conversation is like, I just want her to get into a little bit of trouble. And of course, then we see her like screaming down the street firing a proton pack. And she kind of throws down with Phoebe, where she's just like, he left us, and like, we get a really good look again into like how much disdain there is between Egon and his daughter.
Yeah, sure. You'd resent a parent that left and
completely and just never showed back up. Mm-hmm. And then I think she picks up the ghost detector and ends up finding the bunker.
Yeah, she goes down and sees there's all these pictures of
her and her dad, and then she gets taken. Yeah. She gets taken by either Gozer or the gatekeeper, one or the other.
The gatekeeper is J.K. Simmons, right? It's
Shandor.
Paul Rudd. That's right. Paul Rudd is the...
J.K. Simmons is Shandor. Yeah.
Where was J.K. Simmons
in
this
movie?
He's
the corpse guy
that
they
resurrect.
Oh, is he really? Yeah. I didn't even notice him.
And Olivia Wilde is
who? Is that right?
Gozer, right?
Oh, I didn't realize that was Olivia Wilde.
Yeah,
I just thought it was just like someone they got to look like her.
No, it's Olivia Wilde.
That's funny.
Uncredited.
There is one moment where I get to the credits and I was like, Sigourney.
She's got very distinctive cheekbones.
She does. Yeah, like, she's got like a square jaw.
I thought she was great. And again, I had no idea J.K. Simmons nor Olivia Wilde that's were in really this movie.
Good.
I'm like, that's good.
But when we get to the credits and it says, and Sigourney Weaver, yeah, I was like, Sigourney Weaver wasn't in this movie.
There's a mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't put that together. Didn't even.
Well,
think
you did
about
the
it.
Same
like,
thing
instantly. But yeah, I did the same. But that's where they left it because you go, what? And Sigourney Weaver. Like, I've never seen that happen before. Where they credit someone before they've shown up at a post-credit scene,
which I thought was pretty good.
I saw it. The thing that comes to mind was Godzilla. If you watch the credits, they give copyright credit to Mothra and Rodan before you get that end credit scenes
of like them on the paper
that
or whatever.
Show you Mothra. Because I was just like, we didn't see Mothra.
Yeah.
And then it was like,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But
yes,
this was a
did.
Title credit.
Totally.
This was
totally.
One word on
a
the
lot
screen.
More,
yeah,
right.
You've never seen Anne Sigourney Weaver without seeing Sigourney
I was like,
Weaver.
Where the hell was Sigourney Weaver?
At the end
Weaver?
Of a movie, yeah. So that was really good. But anyway, back to the...
Yeah, so the mom realizes that, like, okay, and this is a throwback to the Dana getting possessed scene. Same eyes, same, like, breathing, same voice. There is
same
no
line.
Dana, only,
yeah.
only Zool.
There is no
like,
mom,
only
Zool.
And so, yeah, our Paul Rudd has been taken as well. So Paul Rudd and...
So he's taken after the Walmart scene.
Oh, yeah, which we've seen. This is in the trailer.
Yeah,
and
in
we've,
vein
we've
of
seen...
the first movie and blatant product placement.
Yeah.
They just straight up went to a Walmart. Yeah. But it was fine. It was fun. This is where you see the Stay Puft Marshmallow
the
minis
mini,
now.
The minis, yeah.
And they get into a bunch of hijinks. I mean, they're the baby Yodas, the cute
yeah.
little
I
whatever.
Took Bella, and she was like, are they going to turn that mic? Oh, they are going to turn that
but
mic.
But they're all
on.
Just doing marshmallow stuff, like cooking themselves, exploding themselves.
It's Gremlins.
It is exactly Gremlins.
Yep, it's that, yeah, yep. That's a good call. But anyway, so he's but really good practical effects with the demon...
There are. It's funny. There are moments where when we see the demon hound for the first yeah. time, it is almost identical to the stop motion yeah. oh, that we saw in
the
first.
The looks
yeah.
just. Yeah. The designs look just like them.
Yep.
But they do practical, and
yep.
you see this huge thing in the Walmart, and he's chasing Paul Rudd, and eventually he jumps on his car and possesses him.
Right. Correct.
And so that, those two have to meet up.
And I am Gozer, and are you the gatekeeper
yeah.
or Azul or whatever.
And they do that, and it's a really awkward. They're all snarling at each other, which is a nice. And it's funny the way that. They call back to it later when they wake up. They're like, I think we... Yeah,
yeah we did.
Think, yeah.
So our kids end up... now it's basically... Now we've kind of gone to the Goonies territory mm-hmm. where it's just the kids. And the kids... The adults have been taken out of this movie altogether. Yeah. And the kids are all... They're all... Right in Ecto-1, they've all got Ghostbusters jumpsuits.
They take
on.
All the jumpsuits and write their own names on
I do like that we've only got one proton pack, which I think is kind of great. Like, they don't all magically find proton packs. Like, it's just the one.
Weren't there two?
There's one in the car.
Finn, okay, because Finn gets a proton pack,
yeah,
too, that doesn't work. But
that's in the car. Okay. But, like, McKenna Grace is the only one that has the
Yeah, they don't suit them all up and you get four new Ghostbusters,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Like, yeah.
So they take this like trolley, I guess, or this lift down into the bowels of this cavern, and we see it's the exact same setup from the first one. Yeah. We've got
looks great.
It
I
looks
think
great.
I think the recreations they did of all the things, whether it be places, objects, you know, the proton packs that are dilapidated and
yeah.
old. I mean, they did a really good job of recreating the same objects or the same look of things. Like the
yeah.
design, the production design mm-hmm. is excellent.
The fight ensues, right? We get McKenna Grace kind of being super cute with Zool, or yeah, Gozer.
Yeah. Gozer, who, I mean, they made Olivia Wilde look just like
they
Gozer
did.
From the
yeah.
first one.
They
yeah.
did.
They
yeah.
freaking
yeah.
made her look just like.
Because that woman is striking, right? Yeah. In that movie, like, she's got very defined right. features. She
That's
almost
why
looks.
You get Olivia Wilde because she is so distinctive.
Yeah.
Like, she has.
Same
yeah.
costume, same everything.
Yeah,
no, there's
great.
A scene where she's. Obviously, the Paul Rudd and the mom turn into the dogs, right? We get the mm-hmm. whole little scene where they turn into the dogs.
Yeah, get that transformation.
Yeah. But there's a scene where she's sitting on the throne, and she's sitting just
yeah.
like it's identical.
Yeah.
It, just the exact same way.
These people did their homework. They were playing.
Right.
Or supposed to be playing similar characters. Because,
correct.
You know, yeah.
Basically, I'm trying to think. Like,
I was looking for Ivan Reitman. I didn't see him. I was surprised if they wouldn't put him in the. Like, he wouldn't put his dad in the movie. Somewhere.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he shows up anywhere because I don't know. I think that'd be a nice homage.
Yeah.
Having directed
yeah.
the. Yeah. Anyway.
They get everybody out, right? Like, that's kind of what happens. Is I think they use a ghost trap, and what we find out is that the only way that Zool or Gozer can stay powerful is if she needs both of like the hellhounds mm-hmm. to stay powerful. So they. Take they throw a ghost trap, I think, and they end up separating the mom from one of the hellhounds. And they're going to do, it's the exact same plan that Egon had in the first one. They've got the hellhound
in the opening of the movie.
They've got the hellhound in the ghost trap, and they take off back to the farm. Mm-hmm. And this is where McKenna says, "We know what this is." And I think this is a great looking scene where you've got Gozer kind of like creeping her way through the cornfield, like up into the farm, which I think is great. And just like she's kind of got everybody dead to rights. And just when you think she's going to kill McKenna, here comes three blasts from proton packs. And who walks out? But it's, of course,
the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I got to tell you,
it's chills, man.
Bill Murray looked old.
He is old, but he looked
more than old. He looked tired.
Yeah. Which I kind of like, right? Like I think of Peter Venkman just being like, God damn it. Like, I got to do this. I already put you away once. Like, yeah. I got to do this again.
I think it's hard because we grow up with these people and don't think they'll ever age, especially movie stars, because they live forever. You watch Ghostbusters anytime you want.
You're going to tell me Ernie Hudson doesn't look almost exactly the same?
No, Ernie Hudson looks great.
Ernie Hudson
for
looks
sure.
Fantastic.
But it's just interesting that we have a picture of what celebrities look like. Yeah. We grew up with them. They are immortalized. That's the magic of movies, and they live forever. You know, they're immortal in that way. He's older.
They
still got it. I think it was great seeing them together. It was like chills, and then the emotional stuff Gozer is able to fight them off. She can take the proton streams, and she uncrosses them. She's uncrossing the streams, and there's nothing they can do. But then McKenna Grace has her hands on the proton pack, and you see a ghost.
She's got Gozer like contained, but she's getting knocked backwards.
A force
right?
battle.
Yeah,
you know?
exactly. And
or
then
Harry Potter battle.
There's like a ghostly hand that comes from the back and like pushes.
Chills.
And when I see the hand, I was like, no, like there's no way.
God.
And then
of course
it pans up and it's a 70. It's an older Egon.
I think it's a perfect CG. When we talk about, sometimes they do it bad.
This was really good.
This was incredible.
Yeah.
This was.
I think it helped because there was no uncanny valley. I think it's
that he is a ghost.
It helps that he's a ghost.
But man,
this is the part that this one got me.
Seriously though, it got me. I mean, the tears started coming down my eyes when you see his face standing there, and then again when they're all next to each other looking over. I'm just like, I mean, I don't even have that much reverence for that. I mean, I like Ghostbusters, but I don't feel that. You know, I was a little younger
and
found it later.
And it's one of those things where it's like, I liked it, but it's also like, is it Ghostbusters? This is more about our love for a franchise than what the film itself was putting on screen.
You are spot on. I think this is a Ghostbusters movie.
But I like Bill Murray's line where he's like, I thought you'd show up.
Of course, Bill Murray would be like, yeah, of course.
But I think the point is that whether you just adore and love and grew up with Ghostbusters or like me found it later, like it doesn't matter because Jason Reitman captured something here between real people who were friends and knew this guy.
Yeah.
And like especially knowing that they had a falling out, that Bill Murray and Harold Ramis had a falling out and didn't talk for a long time.
Oh, is it like in real life?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then
Groundhog Day.
And then I think Murray spoke at his funeral, which was like a really nice thing because he knew that they had fallen out and all this. So like to know that these were real friends that even had problems and like came back together and had this love for this person who's gone, like it got me. It was amazing. Yeah. In the movie it worked, but the real life stuff that you bring
the four
to
of
it,
them standing there together. God. And I do like
so cool.
that they didn't give him a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need an impression of or.
Well, they wouldn't. They do that computer stuff now, but I think it's better they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, they take their old clips and they can make someone say anything and it sounds just like them.
That's true.
It was good.
It was good.
Perfectly handled. It was, sensitively handled. Well done. It looked great. I think it was awesome.
It was great. Yeah. And then
he goes because he makes up with his daughter.
He sees Carrie Coon and they kind of embrace, and I was like,
She forgives him.
How is she holding on to that ghost?
Yeah.
That's my only question.
But she forgives him and he goes away.
He goes away.
What are they? Yeah. I mean, it's.
That's kind of it.
It was his last thing, right?
Yeah, he got his piece,
yeah,
I guess.
But they
kick on the ghost trap. Finn Wolfhard hits it with a proton blast and it kicks it on, and Gozer has been contained for the most part. And that's kind of where it ends, right? Like everybody's kind of back together and everything's okay. We get the good interaction between Paul Rudd and
One at the end, it says for Harold, which was nice. You don't usually see that in the middle. Like, the movie wasn't over yet, but it was kind of neat how they said that, because that scene really was. And
for sure.
That was a good moment.
So then the first post credit, like we said, we see Sigourney Weaver's name in the credits, and we cut to Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver doing the card game.
Well, the movie, doesn't it end with the car driving back to New York?
Oh, it does, driving back to New York.
And then it puts, and like,
it's Ernie Hudson who became...
No, that's the last scene, but after the Harold thing.
The last thing you see before you start getting the credits and then the mid-credits stuff is a shot of New York City.
The Brooklyn Bridge and the car driving up,
and you get the theme song, the original theme song.
Then
we do
the credits, and then Sigourney Weaver, and you're like, what? And then Bill Murray, and so they're married. She's credited as...
Is she really? Okay. Okay.
That's pretty fun. And they're like a married couple doing, you know.
Yeah. And I do like that. So they're doing the card game for the first thing. Yeah. And he nails it. And she was, you know, shocks him
marked?
On purpose. And he's like, no, of course not. Yes,
shocked.
They are.
Yeah. And she shocks him again.
Shocks him again.
It was a playful, really fun interaction between the two of them.
Which is what you got in those, in that first movie. The second one, not so much, because they aren't together in that first one.
Yeah, they're fighting.
Right.
Yeah.
And she looks great. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
As far as like the way that she's aged, I just thought she looked
fantastic,
really young. Yeah.
And then the final credit sequence is Winston kind of giving, he had become like this very successful and like real estate developer, and they do kind of make reference that somebody had bought the old firehouse, but then
he went and bought it back after all this.
But he pulled, like, Winston gives, you know, he's like, I loved this, like, it was, I came in there just looking for a job and it became my life. Yeah. And he pulls Ecto-1.
Is that Ernie Hudson saying that, or is it Winston saying that?
Maybe.
Remember that you see Annie Potts with the coin first when she talks to him, which is the scene past the deleted scene.
Oh, is it?
You mentioned it's just a really nice scene. You see them together.
Right.
Scene we've never seen. And then it cuts to her holding the coin. Present day, and then goes talks to Winston.
That's right. They're talking to each other.
Ernie Hudson, I think, is a great actor.
Ernie Hudson does not get the credit he should
get. He's phenomenal. Whether it's The Crow.
Yeah.
Whether it's anything that he's done over time. Oz, exactly. He is a phenomenal actor. And I interviewed him, and we talked for like an hour. He is such a nice guy. Like, he will just talk to you and has so many interesting stories. But he does
coming
really...
into a role that was not for him, and he kind of came in and made it his own.
But,
and he's always been kind of treated as an afterthought in this franchise.
Yes.
But he brings a lot to it, and I think that this final scene, even though it's like a post credit scene, but it's like his speech that he gives is really good.
I need to go back and rewatch the first one, because I don't remember him having like that love for the car. But maybe he did, because when he sees Ecto-1, he's like, what did they do to you?
Yeah, he does.
Like, I wonder if
he's in charge of fixing it up.
It was like him and Ray's project.
Yeah. Okay.
But he delivers this, and man, you see him go to the firehouse.
Pull the car in, and then he touches the top, and he's like, we'll get you back where you
need
to
be. It's
cool.
Again, and this is just pure nostalgia, but just seeing the firehouse and all that.
Yeah. I thought
light on the... thing on the ghost, like there's been a ghost in this trap at the firehouse the whole time.
They
cut to the Ghostbusters logo, but with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Right, so it's a different logo.
I'm guessing that's the Stay Puft in that.
The other part that I liked is the throwback to the line, like, "Are you a god?"
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you know, of course, Ray. This time I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yeah. And like, so I
there's fun
that.
Lines between the old Ghostbusters and the call.
I think my favorite line of the whole movie is when Paul Rudd crawls out of the dog suit and he's like, my hands hurt from the galloping.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I think this is, I've said before, the first movie I ever saw in theaters was Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, which I don't like.
Was it the real Ghostbusters?
The first movie I saw in theaters was the apple dumping game.
But like, I was trying to do the math, and I was like, there's no way this had to get re-released at some point.
Yeah, that's
because
weird.
Because there's no way they took me at 2 years old to go see this movie.
Are you sure you didn't see Ghostbusters 2?
No, because the story is we're sitting there, I'm enjoying the movie, and then the dog comes out of the statue, and my aunt who took me,
is that a transformation?
Yeah,
is that your first?
So but it's not a transformation, it just comes out of the rock. And my aunt, she's like, you were sitting there and you saw that and you looked up at me and you said, I'd like to go now. And that was, and then we left.
See, I had a similar, my first movie was The Little Mermaid. And when Ursula comes on screen and is doing her creepy stuff, I'm like, I would like to go
now. I would like to go now. But like for me, and now I got to take my kid. I got to take my kid to the theater and see Ghostbusters. So it was like, it was hitting on all of the notes.
When we took the kids to New York, I'm like, we went to Tavern on the Green. And my son's just like, why are we at Tavern on the Green? I was like, this is where the dog in Ghostbusters goes through the window. And he's like, oh, my God, we're in a Ghostbuster scene. Yeah,
that's right.
What did your kids think when you brought them to the re-release of the Apple Dumpling Gang?
Yeah, they were not concerned. Yeah. But
I loved it. I just,
I wanted to love it. I didn't hate it. There's a lot to like there. But I just wish it had been funny.
I agree.
And it's not perfect, but I just mean I really enjoyed the experience of it. I'm not a perfect movie by any means, but I think it hits the right...
If this had been funny, it would have been a home run.
Yeah.
I think this is a solid ground rule double to a triple.
Yeah.
Maybe you need a Diablo Cody. You know, Reitman's first movies were very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. This I thoroughly enjoyed everything about this movie. Yeah,
awesome.
It
was a good movie.
Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Kong shouts zap.
Get ready for a spoiler. Say it twice, 'cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.